You know, for a week each semester in the interpersonal class that I've taught over the last 25 years, I've long gotten a reaction from students regarding a topic that I specifically address. But I noticed that about 10 years ago, that reaction changed somewhat. The topic that I cover in class is entitled Messages That Hurt Others. And it happens to fall and be a part of a section that I teach on the dark side of relationships. I introduced the topic with a news story that you may have caught wind of about 6-7 years ago, and I want to read the news story to you as an intro to where I'm headed today. This comes from the New York Times, November 28, 2007. Dardeen Prairie, Missouri. Megan Meyer died believing that somewhere in the world lived a boy named Josh Evans who hated her. He was 16. He owned a pet snake, and she thought he was the cutest boyfriend she had ever had. To paraphrase slightly here, Josh had contacted Megan through social media, and they had flirted for a couple of weeks, but only online. And Josh said that he couldn't be contacted because they had no phone at his house. Well, it was on October 15th of 2006 that Josh suddenly turned mean in terms of dealing with her online. He happened to call Megan names, and later they traded insults for a full hour. The next day, in his final message, Ron Meyer, Megan's father, said, Josh wrote the following. The world would be a better place without you. Sobbing, Megan ran into her bedroom closet. And at that point, with Josh's words ringing in her ears, Megan chose to end her life. Megan was just 13. The story is a reminder that the words we use have a great impact on other people, both directly and indirectly. You know, the interesting thing about this account and the subject that I cover is that when I first started dealing with the content, I tended to get a reaction out of students. And that reaction was oftentimes empathy for Megan. But I noticed about 10 years ago that the reaction I got tended to be much more mixed. And I got curious about this. I got curious from the vantage point of I still had students who could empathize with what happened with Megan and the family. But I had some who began to justify the words that Josh had used. Some that found reason to provide hurtful messages for their relationships. In fact, I had a response that was a bit telling to me. The individual said, you know, I don't see it as that bad. I don't like the idea she died, but sometimes the only way to equalize a relationship is to strike back. In listening to these responses, we go on and talk about what that means. I oftentimes find that people in classes oftentimes get a fuller sense of how hurtful messages impact their relationships. I get some, you know, roughly a third, who oftentimes try and process and make sense of how social media impacts what it is they do, especially today. And then I get this smaller segment that tend to recognize that the words they use actually can deeply hurt someone else. I really believe that the shift I've seen over a quarter of a century is a symptom of society heading a direction. Not just walking a direction, running and heard a direction. I'm going to ask you to go to 2 Timothy 3. We oftentimes read 2 Timothy 3 and we read the first several verses, verse 5, and we do so to get a sense for what will happen immediately before Christ returns. I want to read this section of Scripture in the New Life Version Bible. I certainly encourage you to follow with me in your own Bible, but I want to read in language that's a little bit more modern, the New Life Version, about what happens immediately before the time of Christ's return. And I'll start in verse 1. You must understand that in the last days there will come times of much trouble. People will love themselves and money. They will have pride and tell of all the things they have done. They will speak against God. Children and young people will not obey their parents. People will not be thankful, and they will not be holy. They will not love each other, verse 3. No one can get along with them. They will tell lies about others. They will not be able to keep from doing things they know they should not do. They will be wild and want to beat and hurt those who are good. Verse 4. They will not stay true to their friends. They will act without thinking. They will think too much of themselves. They will love fun instead of loving God. Verse 5, they will do things to make it look as if they're Christians. So we get a sense here in terms of the audience that we see written here, Paul's letter to Timothy. But they will not receive the power that is for a Christian. Keep away from such people. You know, in considering this tendency to inflict pain on others, particularly when we disagree with someone, it's helpful for us from time to time to simply ask, what does God think? And this is one good instance to do so. The reality is that God has much to say about the words we use, the power of the tongue, which is probably not a surprise, and our relationships with others. Now, I already said to you, and I offered the fact that society seems to be heading a direction. And I would probably contend here that it's not a walk, that this is more like a stampede. And it's a stampede moving toward a cliff where people are headed for the cliff with no sense of what ultimately happens when you jump off the cliff. The dangerous part is sometimes we can be running with the herd and miss the fact of what's happening around us. And so I'm going to ask us today to look at what God offers on the subject of messages, in particular, messages of hurt, but also what God says what we should be doing positively. I've entitled this message, Words of Light, L-I-G-H-T, Words of Light. Indeed, as we'll see here, the words of one who walks with God are good fruit. The one who works according to the flesh, well, that brings with it trouble. So let's start somewhere that I think you probably already have an idea of where we're going. Let's go to James 3 for starters. And the book of James is oftentimes looked at, depending on commentary, as a book in the New Testament that's similar to Proverbs. It's written by James, who happened to be a half-brother of Jesus. And it was written, some say, depending on the commentary, it was actually the first book written of the New Testament. It is really a practical living guide that is for those who aim to have genuine faith. And so that's the content that we deal with in the book of James. James 3, we oftentimes think of James 4 about the dangers of the tongue, but I'm going to ask us to go to James 3, and we'll start reading in verse 6. And it reads this way, "And the tongue is a fire, a world of iniquity. The tongue is so set among our members that it defiles the whole body and sets on fire the course of nature. And it is set on fire by hell. For every kind of beast and bird, of reptile and creature of the sea, is tamed and has been tamed by mankind. But no man can tame the tongue. It is an unruly evil full of deadly poison. With it we bless our God and Father, and with it we curse men who have been made in the similitude of God, in the likeness of God." You know, one of the things that's helpful for us to think through and to acknowledge is that the tongue is really a device of the heart. Now, I could probably ask for input here about the number of verses that deal with the evil nature of our heart. Jeremiah 17:9, you probably remember, says, "The heart is deceitful above all thing and desperately wicked." You know, this verse, Jeremiah 17:9, makes clear that the mind or the heart is capable of producing great evil and great hurt. And depending on the situation we deal with, sometimes in our own relationships, we're fine with the idea that we're going to strike back as fast, as venomous as possible, so that we at least let the other person know we're here. And Jeremiah 17:9 gives us an idea of why. Because we, at the core, separate from God, are rotten. Let's go to Mark 7. Mark 7. We'll go to one of the gospel accounts. Mark 7 offers additional details along these lines about the rotten nature of human beings separate from God. And I will back up to verse 20, Mark 7, verse 20, and it reads this way, "And he said," that's Mark writing, and then we're going to see the words of Jesus Christ in red, "what comes out of a man, that defiles a man. For from within," wow, you ready for this? This is a list. "Out of the heart of man proceed evil thoughts, adulteries, fornications, murders, thefts, covetousness, wickedness, deceit, licentiousness, an evil eye, blasphemy, pride, and foolishness." That is a rough laundry list of things that come out of the heart. And in verse 23, it offers this, "And these evil things," Christ says, come from within and defile a man." So what we then find here, just ever so briefly, is that indeed human beings are rotten to the core. We tend to be rotten to the core because of our own selfish nature. We already established that in previous messages, and we know that to be true. And also because of society, what it does around us. Society tends to set a standard that's really low, and people try and live down to too often. You know, in the class that I teach, I oftentimes quote a woman by the name of Anita Evangelista. And she happens to be a doctor at the University of Texas. And it was in 1994 that she published an article. And the article identified 10 types of hurtful messages. She catalogs these messages. And then in class, we wind up going through them. And they include such things as deception and threats and negative judgments of others. I don't want to use her list in 1994 because God identified a number of destructive behaviors that Christians should avoid much earlier on, thousands of years before. So today I thought we would do better by identifying 5 different message types that hurt others that we're to avoid. 5 message types that hurt others that we're to avoid. And I'll start by listing them ever so briefly, and then we'll go and tackle each one. First off is hurting others through lying. Hurting others through lying. Secondly, hurting others through accusations. Hurting others through accusations. Now we got a pattern going. Hurting others through rumors or gossip. Hurting others through backbiting would be number 4. And hurting others through empty promises. Hurting others through empty promises. Indeed, it makes the most sense to start at square one. So let's deal with hurting others by lying. And if you will, go with me to Exodus 20. And in each case, as we go through each one of these hurting behaviors, let's define them. And then let's go to a couple of scriptures, maybe 3, to identify what God says on the subject. Exodus 20, verse 16. Exodus 20 and Deuteronomy 5 say the same thing. You and I both know that it lists God's commandments there. It begins in Exodus 20, verse 1 this way, "And God spoke all these things, saying." So we know who the author, we know who's speaking here. We know they're not suggestions. We know they're not options. We were talking this morning over in the Buford congregation, and Mr. Nathan Schrader was speaking of a sermon he heard years ago in the early 90s, and he said that the individual was talking about the commands of God, and the individual said, "Well, God doesn't, the reference here is not to the Ten Commandments. This is about commands in general," because we know that people tend to bristle at being commanded to do things. And it was one of the ways that he said the speaker explained away the keeping of the Ten Commandments. So we're all clear here. We all know the same thing. God was the one who issued these Ten Commandments, and he did so that they would not just be applied in the Old Testament, but also in the New. So, as verse 1 already states, God spoke all these words, saying, and the relevance of all of these, the importance of all of these, is not to be minimized. I'm just going to ask you to go to verse 16. "You shall not bear false witness against your neighbor." You know, if you go to the word lie in Scripture, and you check it with commentary, Strong's Concordance is where I went to this in order to define what lying is. It involves the following: deception, falsehood, fraud, or wrong. Proverbs 6, for some of us, this was a key section of Scripture just, 4 or 5 years ago. Proverbs 6 reminds us of God's position on the topic of lying. Proverbs 6 verses 16 through 19. Proverbs 6, verse 16 says this. These things the Lord hates. Proverbs 6, verse 16. These things the Lord hates. Yes, seven are an abomination to him. A proud look, which I see referenced here at least marginally as haughty eyes. And then the second item, a lying tongue. Hands that shed innocent blood. And then it goes further from there through 18. And it mentions lying in a little different context, a little different way in verse 19, which we'll get to here shortly. It says, a false witness who speaks lies. You know what I became interested in when I think about lying is how prevalent is lying today? And I went combing around the web and found a Harris poll from just a few years ago where 2,000 U.S. adults responded to talk about who they lie to and what kind of lies they tell. Now, the data that they provide is quite extensive. But the things that I found kind of interesting here are, to whom do we lie most often? Americans in this Harris poll. And they said the following. That 43% of us tend to lie to parents. 41% of us tend to lie to spouses or significant others. 38% of us tend to lie to our doctor. 36% of us tend to lie to our best friend, and 32% of us lie to our sibling. When we get into the topic of what do we typically lie about, the number one, maybe I'm taking this one from you, the number one topic we tend to lie about, want to take a shot at this, is money. We typically lie most about money. The other topics that were also on that list involve such things as politics, and our belief system. You know, as I got to reading about this and thinking about this, as I started to apply this to myself, no surprise there, and I thought, do I lie? And I'll turn the question to you. Do you tell the truth? Now, I know what you're already thinking. You're saying, I don't lie. I go to church. I'm a Christian. I don't lie. But I'm going to ask you to think for just a minute about this. Just pause for a second and think about this. The last time someone asked you how you're doing, and you felt miserable, how'd you respond? The last time you had a mate, maybe it was your wife, who came to you and said, honey, what do you think about the way this looks on me? How did you respond? I realized that it was just a few years ago that I was talking with someone. An individual said, I think this is at Winter Family Weekend, said, hey, you look pretty good. And I said, you know, I haven't put on a pound since college. And then I got to thinking about that later. I haven't put on a pound. I'd put on 20 pounds since college. And it really started bothering me that I had said this. I think I went back and apologized to that person. I said, I've put on a few more than one. You might ask yourself, or those around you, because again, society finds this acceptable, the last time you called in for a sick day, were you sick? You know, I was really troubled by my brother-in-law about a year and a half ago. He'd gotten a good job at Chrysler. He'd gone a long period of time where he hadn't been able to work. He'd looked for work, finally got a job with Chrysler, and the job worked this way. He had to go to work, he had to go to school, but they would pay for his school. So I asked him a little over a summer ago, I said, how's the job going? One of his responsibilities is to make sure the line for Chrysler keeps moving, keeps working well. And he said, the part that bothers me so much is people lie. And I said, give me an example of this. Give me something practical I can put my teeth into. And he said, well, whenever the Detroit Tigers had opening day in Detroit, we had to shut down the line because 40% of the people on the line called in sick that day. They had a sold-out stadium in Tiger Stadium that day. You know, when I heard that, and I got to thinking about the numbers to this Harris poll, I thought to myself, you know, roughly, that means about every four people are lying. That was troubling to me. Or we might say, in other instances, if we want to categorize it maybe a little bit different way, 30% or 40% of the time, we get people who are lying. You know, when you deal with things in life, again, I have to ask myself as well, Am I truthful in how I deal with people? Or do I tend to shade that truth? Because I know society around us tells it's okay. God knows it's not. God makes clear it's not. God tells us to be truthful in all of our dealings. That's our responsibility as part of this calling. So this is a first type of message that we need to avoid. Second type, hurtful category two, hurting others through accusations. You know, to accuse someone means to speak against, to charge with a fault or an offense. It's really no surprise that accusation is a pattern that humans, that society finds acceptable, because the God of this world is identified in this way. Revelation 12. We're going to go just read one verse in Revelation. Revelation 12, one singular verse here. Verse 9, we know that this is prophetic, it's upcoming, but note the language, the label that's given to Satan that shows up in verse 10. Verse 9, if you remember here by background, the great dragon was cast out, that serpent of old called the devil and Satan, who deceives the whole world. Verse 10, then I heard a loud voice saying in heaven, now salvation and strength and the kingdom of our God, this is yet to come, and the power of his Christ have come. For the accuser of the brethren, who accused them before our God day and night, has been cast down. I want you to think about just that for a second. Who accused them before God day and night. This is what Satan does. He goes, and you can fill in the blank on your name here. He goes to the throne of God when given opportunity. We get a sense for this for, remember the book of Job, early there in the book of Job? And he's looking for accusations on you. He's accusing you, whatever your name is. He's pulling everything you're doing wrong. Whether it's right or wrong, it doesn't matter. He's accusing you before God. Now, we know that God is who he is, and so he sees through this. But at least it gives us a clear indication of how Satan operates. It's one primary behavior that he finds necessary in his role to destroy you. You know, as we've gone through the book of Acts, we know by background here that the New Testament Christians oftentimes suffered through accusations. It did not matter whether the accusations were founded or not, did it? In fact, as we know and see so many times in the New Testament, in the book of Acts, indeed they were unfounded. As we've gone more recently through Paul's defenses, what do we find? Is in each case, he had an accuser. And in each defense, as we work through this, through the 20s there in Acts, it didn't matter whether it was founded or not. There was just that person raising claims against Paul. Now, interestingly enough, if you remember, Paul talks about being one like that before he was converted. In fact, I'll just quote from Galatians 1, verse 13. It says this, "For you have heard of my former conduct in Judaism, how I persecuted the church of God." Paul made it his plight to accuse, so that something stuck. The tail end of the verse there says in Galatians 1:13, "And I tried beyond measure, persecuted the church of God beyond measure, and tried to destroy it." That was his aim. Now, one example of this, as we see, is in Acts 23:30. Again, I'm just making a reference here, is because we see Paul again on trial, having to defend himself because of accusation. The reality is that the society around us finds accusation as acceptable. You don't have to spend but a few minutes online looking at any number of websites. I mean, they pop up for me as soon as I close out my Hotmail account. I feel like I'm inundated with accusations of people. And I'm not thinking of anyone specifically here. But the nature, the driver of much of that money is accusation, the way they make money. God commands you and I to be different. 1 Peter 1. 1 Peter 1. 1 Peter 1, verse 13. We're going to read 13, 14, and 15. We're going to jump to a verse, and then we're going to jump ahead one chapter. 1 Peter 1, 13 through 15. 1 Peter 1, verse 13 reads this way. Therefore, gird up the loins of your mind, be sober, and rest your hope fully upon the grace that is to be brought to you at the revelation of Jesus Christ. It's exactly what Mr. Graby spoke of. As obedient children, not conforming yourselves to the former lusts, as in your ignorance, which if you... I have a marginal reference here. Remember it talks about in Romans 12, verse 2, talks about don't be conformed to this world. All those things that are acceptable around you, don't do those things. If you do, you will not make the kingdom of God. If you adapt. Going forward, verse 15, but as he who called you is holy, you also be holy in all your conduct. Verse 22, we're jumping way ahead. Since you have purified your souls in obeying the truth through the Spirit and sincere love of the brethren, love one another fervently with a pure heart. Now here's where I was headed. I did the rest as a lead up to. Chapter 2, verse 1. Therefore, laying aside all malice, all guile, hypocrisy, envy, and all evil speaking, as newborn babes, desire the pure milk of the word, that you may grow thereby. You know, what we find here is indeed the human tendency is to accuse. If I throw up an accusation, you've got to work twice as hard to fight it off. But God makes very clear that accusations are dangerous and we are to avoid them at all costs. That takes us to hurtful message category 3, hurting others through gossip and rumors. Gossip and rumors. You know, if we just define what these two words mean, they oftentimes overlay just a hair. And by definition, if you go to biblical commentaries and or even modern dictionaries, they tend to give very similar definitions. Gossip is defined this way. Casual or unconstrained conversation or reports about other people, typically involving details that are not confirmed as true. That's gossip. As I already noted here, rumors are closely related. A rumor is a story or statement in general circulation without confirmation or certainty as to the facts. It is gossip, which is what we just saw before, and hearsay, and that comes from dictionary.com. You know, as I've already noted here, we happen to have a society that's steeped in rumors. A lot of money is made by rumors. Many a company... you can run the gamut here. TMZ and otherwise are oftentimes out there speculating this and that. I was troubled by this a while back. At times after dinner, not every night, but after dinner, I'll oftentimes go in, we'll flip on a show, or I'll flip on a show. Sometimes I get people who join me. Sometimes people beat me to the TV. But I'll flip on a show. And I was doing the sand channel surf thing around 7 p.m., 7:30, and I thought, I'll watch something for a few minutes. And that TMZ show, which, I don't know, for whatever reason, TMZ kind of gets under my skin, but I guess I don't have a personal vendetta against TMZ. It just seemed to get under my skin. There was a TMZ show, and then there were these other two TMZ spinoffs. And I thought to myself, what is going on here? It's not enough that we have 30 minutes to deal with accusation or to deal with gossip and rumor. Now we've got to have another 30 minutes. There was like TMZ Sports and there was a TMZ Entertainment. The only reason why I reference this is because those kind of outlets, those shows make money. People tune in, they sell advertising, the whole system gets driven. The internet, as I've already said, is one and the same. Okay, it is fueled by hearsay, by gossip. And when it shows up as human beings, what do we oftentimes do? We run to wherever it is. We'll all pile on. Gotta hear the latest. Run over the next. Gotta hear the latest. You know, whenever we went down to Mobile, Alabama to visit family, my sister had, we had this discussion. For whatever reason, the magazine company seemed to have her name. And they've been sending her magazines left, right, and center. And I said, how are you getting all these magazines? And she said, I don't know. One of the magazines that she had in the stack was, I don't remember if it was an OK magazine. It was one of these. It was not the Star or the National Enquirer, but it was a magazine. It looked more official. So for whatever reason, we got the magazine she'd got, and I'm killing time. I'm flipping through it, and then I honestly don't remember how it got into our car, but it made its way home to us. So what am I doing? I'm killing time one day. Let's go flip through it. And I'm flipping through it, and I think I probably went through about a third of it, and I thought, wow, it's just... I'm reminded of the phrase, chewing gum for the mind. And I looked at these stories, these different people, and I thought, whatever. And then I found myself like a day later, went and picked a magazine up and looked at it all, looked at another third of it, and looked at it. And I noticed that afterward, I kind of got a bad attitude. And I thought, that's real strange. Why do I have a bad attitude? Who's causing my day to be bad? And then it was like a few days later that I looked at it again. And I thought to myself afterward, I know why I'm pretty aggravated here. I'm feasting on junk here for the mind. You know, it is representative of really, at times, what our society values. We don't seem to get enough junk today to chew on. The reality is that gossip and rumors have no place in a Christian's life. You know, I was reminded of, and I don't know why I thought of this, of a school I went to that happened to be west of Wichita, Kansas. Now, I got to get the names and dates right. Oh, my. I don't even remember the name of that school. Goddard Elementary School. I think it wasn't an elementary. It was a middle school. I was like 6 or 7. And I remember to myself, there was a friend of mine. There was a guy down the street. I'll leave him nameless. And there was another guy that I used to play basketball with. I was 7th grade. And they would oftentimes speak very badly of a female. They would talk about her indiscretions, who she was sleeping with. And I happened to sit by her in class. And I remember on one occasion, and I don't remember if it was kind of a group project or whatever. I remember her name was Beth. That much I remember. I remember talking with Beth, and somehow we broached this subject of her reputation. And she talked about, even as a 7th grader, how painful it was for what people were saying about her. Now, interestingly enough, she didn't deny or confirm. She just talked about how painful it was. And I remember thinking to myself, wow, I don't know if I would bear well what you're going through. She recognized that the rumor mill was fueled about as fast as it could go, and that she was a product of it, and that there were too many rumors and there was too much out there for her to combat. And she just talked about how much it hurt her. Now, I use her for an example because even as I think back, in terms of an emotional impression it made on me, all I thought to myself was, people are mean. And indeed, human beings are. We tend to be very mean, separate from God. Proverbs 17, verse 9. Proverbs 17, verse 9. Proverbs 17, 9 reminds us of how we are to be. He who covers a transgression seeks love. But he who repeats a matter, he who gossips, separates the best of friends. You know, the same point is made over in the book of Psalms, Psalm 101. Psalm 101, verses 4 and 5. Psalm 101, verses 4 and 5 says this: a perverse heart shall depart from me. I will not know wickedness. Whoever secretly slanders his neighbor. Now this is God speaking, so we're clear. Starts in verse 1. Him I will destroy. The one who has a haughty look and a proud heart, him I will not endure. You know, God makes clear that we should never repeat something that we're not 100% sure of. It is, as I've already said here, it is commonplace in society today to blow things out of proportion, to twist, to add, to change, to alter. But I have to tell you, it's not a modern-day problem. You can look at one account in the book of John where indeed it was a problem at the time of Christ and a problem well before. If you will, go with me to John 21. John 21. We're going to give it an example or see an example of rumor that John writes about that Christ has to clarify. John 21, this is at the tail end of the book of John. And if you will, read with me this account where Peter asked Christ, what's to become of John? John 21, verse 21. And Peter, seeing him, said to Jesus, but Lord, what about this man? Referring to John. And Jesus said to him, if I will that he remain till I come, what is that to you? You follow me. Now remember by background, if you can just go up about 10 verses, and this is where Jesus was talking to Simon Peter, and he said, feed my lambs, tend my sheep, feed my sheep. And so we see Peter down here looking over at John and saying, well, what about him? And he says, if I will that he remain till I come, what is that to you? You follow me. Now notice what happens in verse 23. The rumor mill goes nuts. Then this saying went out among the brethren that this disciple would not die. Did you catch that? The rumor went nuts. John's going to stay alive until Christ returns. That's what the rumor was. Yet Jesus did not say to him that he would not die, but if... Two letters, powerful word. If I will that he remain till I come, what is that to you? You know, it winds up here that Jesus has to squash this rumor, that John records it. What we find here is something to avoid. The rumor mill is something that we're to avoid. We need to be people who are upstanding in language and words and messages, not ones who lean toward gossip or rumors. That's a third type of message to avoid. Let's go to category four, hurtful messages for hurting others through backbiting. Romans 1. Romans 1. Now we know that the book of Romans has a tremendous amount in terms of fundamental theology, in terms of just foundational doctrine that is so valuable here. And we see... here, as we see Paul's letter that's written to the Church of Rome, a warning against something. Romans 1, verse 18. So again, here's Paul writing, for the wrath of God, Romans 1, 18, is revealed from heaven against all ungodliness and unrighteousness of men who suppress the truth in righteousness. So I'm going to ask you to jump ahead. We're going to go to verse 28, and even as they did not like to retain God in their knowledge, God gave them over to a debased mind to do those things which are not fitting. Now we're going to get a list of a lot of things that seem really bad, and somewhere in here is this term, backbiting, being filled with unrighteousness, sexual immorality, wickedness, covetousness, maliciousness, full of envy, murder, strife, deceit, evil-mindedness. They are whisperers. And then it adds this word that seemingly shouldn't be here. What in the world is this all about? Backbiters. Backbiter. How in the world does that one come up? Backbiters. You know, if you go and look up the definition of backbiting, because this is not necessarily a word we use today. If we just turn the word, we split it in half and we turn it around, biting back at someone is backbiting. And Strong's Concordance actually refers to it this way, as defaming another person, speaking evil of another person, of slandering another person. You know, we see in Scripture this occur multiple different ways. Proverbs 18 speaks of it as well. Proverbs 18, just two verses here. Proverbs 18, two verses. Speaks of the tendency we have that whenever someone does something to us, we're ready to strike right back. Proverbs 18, verses 7 and 8. Proverbs 18, verse 7. A fool's mouth is his destruction, and his lips are the snare of his soul. The words of a talebearer, now my reference here lists it as a gossip or a gossiper, are like tasty trifles, and they go down into the inmost body. The idea of those that gossip, it just doesn't bounce off. We're not like Teflon people. Solomon talked about, if you take fire into the bosom, you're getting burned. And gossip works the same way. You know, it's easy, as we see here from these verses, from Romans 1, verse 18 and 29 through 30, is that backbiting is one reaction human beings oftentimes have whenever they're kind of backed into a corner. You know, the problem of backbiting is one really hard to overcome, because our tendency when backed into a corner is to do what? This whole fight-flight thing. Okay, you either want to run from the situation, or, buddy, you're going to square off. And if squaring off is what's necessary for us to balance this thing out, I'm fine with that. You know, the greatest example we have of someone who never was a backbiter is Jesus Christ. He was beaten, ridiculed, scorned, mocked, spat upon, cursed, jeered. And yet he never once turned on his tormentors. He did the unthinkable. He forgave them. I have to ask myself, you have to ask yourself, is your tendency to bite back? Do your words cut, or are they kind? Unless you and I overcome this tendency, God makes clear we will have no place in His kingdom. We are to avoid at all costs backbiting. We've been through lying, accusations, gossip, and backbiting. Let's go to one final type of message to avoid, and that's empty promises. Hurting others through empty promises. You know, it's increasingly difficult today. I can't speak for what you've been through. It's increasingly difficult today to find a person who keeps his or her word. I can use a very basic example to illustrate this one. Whenever we've had necessary or the need to have a home repair, I have never been so troubled as to find someone who's actually honest. I stand, whatever you want to do, in a bathroom, and I look around the corners of the bathroom that were to be painted by the guy who started the paint job, the one that I paid all the money up front, the one who kept saying, oh, I'll come back and do that, and I'm reminded of this. I guess he got 80% of the paint on the walls. But all the corners, they look miserable. Never came back and did that. One of the things that Sarah and I have seen in terms of just hiring people is it's so hard. I've tried Angie's List. I may wind up coming to someone in here and asking for who you have painting your house or doing your basic duties around the house in terms of home repair, because I can't find a guy who holds his word. I thought for a while, and as I got to thinking about this message, I thought, well, maybe that's just isolated to certain professions. And then I got to thinking about my grad class. I happen to have 11 very competent females right now in the grad class that I'm teaching, and we're working with Home Depot. We're responsible on Monday, not too far from here, for going in to their merchandising team and making a presentation. And the 11 ladies who I have who work as a part of this project are responsible for doing an assessment of Home Depot and then providing a full report, providing an executive brief, and doing a full presentation. With 11 people, you would think that they would share duties. It has not worked that way. In fact, on a couple of different times, I've either by email or in one kind of tougher session where I had to really get harsh with them, say, everyone's got a pitch. And despite the fact I would love to tell you all 11 have worked equally, I had that one project manager sitting in my office about a week and a half ago saying, it's not happening, Dr. Ost. What am I supposed to do? And I said something, it was probably harsh to say. I said, welcome to the work world. This is how this works. Where you're going to have 8-10 people responsible for a task, 2 or 3 people are going to do the bulk of that work. I said, it's going to pay dividends if you do the work. And granted, you're going to look really ugly if you don't do it when it comes Monday that we have to present. But the reality is, not everyone's going to pull her weight. So I'm asking you to go back to the team and to make happen what needs to happen. Now, I have no idea what's happened in the last week and a half since we did this. But inevitably, I know that that project manager, she's going to do the bulk of it. In fact, the comment that I got from a couple of others was, well, such and such person has already checked out, which means you got to cover that part of the project. You know, as we see in Scripture so many different ways, Proverbs 20, verse 6, I'll quote, it says this in terms of empty promises. Proverbs 26, Solomon writes, most men will proclaim everyone his own goodness, but a faithful, trustworthy man, this comes in the form of a question, who can find? Who can find this person? Ecclesiastes 5 is where I will go. Ecclesiastes 5, verse 4, certainly applies to the matter of making and keeping promises. Ecclesiastes 5, verse 4, it says this, when you make a vow to God, do not delay to pay it, for he has no pleasure in fools. Pay what you have vowed. It is better not to vow than to vow and not pay. Do not let your mouth cause your flesh to sin, nor say before the messenger of God that it was an error. Why should God be angry at your excuse and destroy the work of your hands? For in the multitude of dreams and many words, there is also vanity. And then 3 words, but fear God. You know, what we see from this verse and we see from other places in God's word is that when we give our word to do something, little thing, we're expected to do it. As mates, as parents, as brothers and sisters, as reliable co-workers, our responsibility is to keep our word. We're to do it prior to God's kingdom because it will be expected in God's kingdom. You know, in that we've gone through 5 behaviors, I don't think it's fair for us just to stop and walk away. Because we also need to see what we should be saying. And I think even as I kind of looked through this message, I thought to myself, some may walk away. I might walk away saying, I've got nothing. I'm not going to say anything because it's just easier not to say anything. But the reality is God provides directions along those lines too. Proverbs 10. Proverbs 10. Our words should be words of light. Proverbs 10, verse 20. Proverbs 10, verse 20. We're going to get some contrast here, as oftentimes happens in the Proverbs. Proverbs 10, verse 20. The tongue of the righteous is choice silver. The heart of the wicked is worth little. Remember the heart we started with? The lips of the righteous feed many, but the fools die for lack of wisdom. You know, what we come to, whether it be here or whether we go to other verses, I'll just make reference to Colossians 3, verse 8, is that our talk, what we say, should be clean of slander, bitterness, envy, and gossip. It's God's will that we speak with wisdom and consideration of others, not hurting others. Ephesians 4. Whenever I was at Ambassador College, Ephesians 4 is where I'm going, For whatever reason, I recalled, I noted this morning, a forum or an assembly. I think I'm more convinced that it was an assembly. And we got into, which maybe is not a surprise when you have 700 college students together, we got into a problem at that point about the danger of spreading rumors. That much I remember. And I remember that the nature of what it was we were spoken to was that our conversation needed to be upstanding. And I don't know why. I know I had read this verse before. But for whatever reason, this verse really just kind of stuck with me and struck me a bit hard. And I found myself going back. And I don't remember if we were challenged to go and write the verse out a number of times, 10 times. I just remember I went back to my desk to write this verse out because it says so much about the way in which we are to express ourselves to others. Ephesians 5, verse 21, 29 says this. Ephesians 5, 29. Well, that doesn't look right. 4:29. That's why it doesn't look right. Thank you. You probably have it marked up in your Bible. Ephesians 4:29, let no corrupt communication proceed out of your mouth, but what is good for necessary edification, that it may impart grace, the building up, to the hearers. You know, as we see here and we see elsewhere, God aims that we are constructive, are builders in how we deal with others, that we're not those who tear down. You know, the key to all of this in relating to one another, you already know the key. It's getting closer to God. The closer we are to God, the more we drink in of His Word, the more we work to obey Him, the more we put His truth in action in our lives, the more what comes out of our mouth is right. And that's as it should be, because that is our calling. You know, I started this message with a story that I use in class and have used for the last 7 years. One I talk about involving Megan Meyer, a 13-year-old who believed that somewhere in the world a boy named Josh Evans hated her. It was Josh. He was the one who sent online, "The world would be a better place without you." And those were the words that Megan found unbearable, and the reason that she ended her life. Now, there's a twist to this, and I need to offer what that twist is. And this comes from the same New York Times article. It goes on to report that those words that were so painful to Megan didn't come, believe it or not, from a boy by the name of Josh Evans. The article reads this way: 6 weeks after Megan's death, her parents learned that Josh Evans never existed. He was an online character created by Lori Drew, a 47-year-old mom who lived 4 houses down the street in the rapidly growing community 35 miles northwest of St. Louis. She had created an identity to do this. That an adult would plot such a cruel hoax. Now, the article goes into the fact that she did this because there was jealousy between her daughter and Megan. So she created this fictitious character. The article reads this way: that an adult would plot such a cruel hoax against a 13-year-old girl has drawn outrage in phone calls, email messages, and blog posts from around the world. Many people expressed anger because St. Charles County officials did not charge Mrs. Drew with a crime. They couldn't. There was nothing on the books. But a St. Charles County Sheriff's Department spokesman, Lieutenant Craig McGuire, said that Mrs. Drew did the following. She might have been rude. She might have been immature. But her behavior was not illegal. And there could be no prosecution. It's since that time that Tina Meyer, that's Megan's mom, has worked hard to get legislation passed so that people can be held accountable for what they say online. To this day, she continues to make strides, but there is no justice. Now, I use this story again to show the impact of hurtful messages. You and I both know that though we are held to laws of the land, the standard you and I are held to are much higher. I'll quote Proverbs 10, verse 32. It says this, "The lips of the righteous know what is acceptable." God expects you and me in our calling to use words that are pleasing in His sight. Our words, whether it be face-to-face or through social media, need to be rays of light and not wells of darkness. Let us, as God's true people, be encouraging, be comforting, and be inspiring of others. And let us be truthful, because brethren, that is our charge.